On this episode of the podcast, I sit down with the founder of Video Husky, Justin Tan. This was a cool episode for me because Video Husky has been the company I have paid to outsource all my video editing for years. I was one of their first customers on the platform, and they have done wonders by me at a fraction of the cost. Anyone who's ever paid a video editor knows you could be paying, you know, 30, 40, 65 bucks an hour, and they will do unlimited videos for you at a fraction of the cost. Literally, they churn out nearly anywhere from 50 to 100 videos per month for me, every month, for fucking pennies on the dollar. I've got a link in the show notes if you're interested. It's an affiliate link. It'll give you some money off of the service. But if you're looking to scale up your content, I think you definitely want to look in the Video Husky. And this conversation with Justin as to how he grew this firm, this company, it was really interesting. I hope you guys enjoy it. What is up, guys? It is Stu, and it's another episode of the What the Fuck Gym Talk podcast. And I have Justin Tan, the founder, co-founder or founder?
Founder.
Founder, solo dolo of Video Husky. So a lot of my colleagues and all that back in the day were always like, you know, I used to shoot, produce, edit all my stuff. And I did it at a volume that was unsustainable. I woke up at 3:30 every morning. I shot a vlog. I edit. It was, you know, I was channeling as much as I could my inner Casey Neistat maybe. And it was an unsustainable effort, but I always got, you know, hey man, you put out so much content. And then when I started working with you guys, I had buddies hit me up like, bro, what the fuck are you, how are you getting out so much footage? Like, you're dropping something multiple times a day. And I was like, Video Husky. These guys are, they're absolutely killing it. And I have you to thank for that, man.
Oh, thanks, man. Really appreciate it. That's one of the nicest things I think people have said about Video Husky. And
So talk to me about this. So what's your background? Why do you decide to throw up a video editing, you know, outsourcing company? What led to that?
Yeah. So Video Husky started back in 2018, and at the time, I was running Facebook ads for local gyms, actually, yoga studios in Hong Kong. And that was when video advertising became really popular and Facebook was really pushing it with cheap CPMs. And it was my first time trying to find somebody to edit new like video footage. And like, graphic design is easy. It's 2D. The moment that you have, you add one more component, time, right? Because you have an entire video. It's so much harder to outsource, so much harder to give instructions. And when I realized that, and I combined it with the idea of something like Design Pickle, which is a flat monthly service outsourced design studio, I was like, oh, I could do this, but for video editing. And that's how we began, actually.
I used Design Pickle for a long time for basic stuff until Canva just got so powerful that my staff could do it, right? Like they could do a really decent job. Okay. So you go there, and then, so where's the thought process? Cause obviously you're doing international level Facebook ads. Did you instantly just start recruiting? Like, how did you go about recruiting the first couple team members and assigning them to accounts?
So the first team member was a personal friend's boyfriend who had just moved to Philippines, and he said he was looking for work. And I said, look, I got a 3-month project. I have no clients, no, like nothing. 90 days, we're going to try to get 10 clients. If it works, you know, we'll just keep on rolling. If it doesn't work, then well, at least you have 3 months worth of work and you're paid for it. Are you down? And he said, yeah, I'm down. So we actually got to 4 clients after 86 days. I told him, I was like, look, man, I don't think this is happening. But in the next 4 days, we ended up bringing on 6 new clients, brought somebody else on. And from there, we just kind of kept on rolling. So that was the starting point.
Are the Philippines your main source for labor?
Yeah.
And I want to talk about this. We were talking about this a little bit before hitting record. I'll share people that I use Video Husky. And there's instantly, especially here in America, this instant thing of like, I want a domestic editor. I told him, I said, listen, I think I understand, like, you're concerned about a language barrier, or maybe they don't understand the pop culture of America, or maybe whatever it is. And I mean, I've been, you know, whatever, this might be going on 5 years or so that I've been using you guys, and I've never had an issue
getting, you know, having someone understand what the vision I'm trying to bring to life. And I'm generally taking inspiration for my vision from other videos, right? You know, whether it was Gary V with his vlogs back in the day, or, you know, this style of a, you know, or Instagram reel or whatever it may be. How do you get, like, what would you say to somebody who's sitting there and they're looking to expand their content game, but they have that reservation of hiring overseas work because they're concerned it's just not gonna, they're not gonna be able to pick up what, you know, this American pop culture thing is putting down?
I'd say the first thing is that it makes a lot of sense to be nervous about it. I didn't grow up in the States. I went to an American school in Hong Kong, and that's where I grew up. And so there'd be a lot of times where I have the opposite feeling. So for example, when I do go to the States and let's call it go to a Chinese restaurant, it's like, are they actually a Chinese restaurant, or are they like somebody who's pretending to be a Chinese restaurant? Right.
Yeah.
And so I have the exact same feeling when I go to a different place, and it's completely understandable. I'll say on my side, it was one of the things that helped a lot was because my family's in manufacturing. They had manufacturing facilities for apparel in first in China and now in Philippines and in Cambodia. I guess it kind of like, I grew up with under like my dad always talking about working across different countries, across different cultures. And I spent a good amount of time personally in Philippines back when I potentially was going to work for my family's business. And so seeing the way that clothes got manufactured in Philippines and then got sold in America, for me, it's like, if people are willing to go and invest, like we're talking like tens of millions of dollars into building up a prop, like a plant, right? You know, for it could be clothes, it could be cars, it could be whatever. It's very natural that this is going to happen for service work, which requires next to no investment. They have internet, they have a computer, a couple thousand dollars, you're good to go. It's like, this is a thing, this will happen. And we've already proven that with clothing and apparel. So why not across other services? And so in my head, like this is a certain inevitability, but it's how do we overcome those reservations? And so I guess like part of it was my own background that made it kind of natural. But at the same time, it's also being able to connect with, I guess, people and show them, look, it's actually not that difficult. And so that's how I would talk to somebody who has those reservations. We already live in an international globalized world. It just doesn't feel like it sometimes.
And I've gotten to experience the growth and the sophistication of Video Husky as it started. I remember like version one, like whatever, when I got in version 1.0 and watching you guys kind of scale this up and improve the service and even the team that somebody gets. So would you talk a little bit about essentially the overall service of Video Husky and kind of, you know, I consider them when I talk to people, hey, my team is working on this. I mean, I consider Galley, he just moved on, but I mean, I've got Mark, I've got Paolo, I've got the same team. I had my account manager, the same one for years. Talk to everyone a little bit about exactly what is the service Video Husky offers, and then how does it actually manifest once you're a customer and you're working with you guys?
So I'll say like in day one, when you first came, I mean, we did all kinds of different videos, right? Ranging from like, in your case, more of a talking head videos to for some people we do fitness videos, for other people we do real estate, and then for a while we did wedding. And like the key thing for us was realizing, oh, when you work across all these different industries, the quality of work will never get that good because you are unable to specialize. And so over time we've tried more and more to specialize in certain kinds of videos, specifically online native, like talking head is like by far our most popular category now. And when we focus on that, it enables the editor to really double down on even little things like how many beats per pause after somebody speaks on a podcast or on a video before you make that cut. And it's like, it sounds like a very small thing, but those are the kind of things that make content more enjoyable, that we don't notice we don't realize until we see it done poorly. And so one of the things for us is like, if we can enable our customers to receive that level of quality, the only way to really do that is by ensuring we have editors that hopefully can stick around for a long time, but also make sure that they have similar repeated work so that they can harness their expertise and they don't always have to teach themselves new things. And so in our case, it's like our response, I guess, like Video Husky's founding responsibility to ensure there is that win-win-win across the board, where it's a very narrow level of expertise that enables a really good result, or at least that's the hope. And yeah, that's how I would portray it. And so our hope is always that, like in your case, you're always working with, if not the same editor for a very long time, definitely like, at least for a very long time, I guess.
Yeah. And I'm blanking right now. My creative director mainly does most of the communication, but we recently just got, Gally, he moved on, and we have a new girl. She's taking his place. But I mean, the communication was great. There was several emails. I was like, hey, let's jump on a call that we meet face to face. You know, I've talked with Gally about like what are your main projects? You know, the one thing I love that we do with you guys is we have the different brand hubs, right? So I've got the gym real estate company, and I've got all those brand specific guidelines here and thumbnail guidelines and all that. And then the WTF videos, and if I was doing any of the respect the tempo stuff or something for a client. And it was how easy it was. And again, it's through either we jump on a call. Every time I submit a project, there's an option. Would you like to jump on a call with your team to talk about this project? So let's say I pulled something out of left field that I've never done before, and maybe there's no expectations that, or I need some ideas. I need some creative ideas. I feel confident I would be able to get on a call with my team and be like, okay, guys, here's the idea. Here's the footage, the assets, everything I'm going to have. What do we think we can make out of this? And I have a creative team then, people who are working in videos and creative all day long to help me bounce ideas and stuff off of it. And that is such an evolution from where you guys started, obviously, but from where it is now, I think it's absolutely incredible.
Yeah. And that's one of the crazy things. So for example, that's not, that's something that's relatively newer, right? And for the longest time, I was so against doing calls. In my head, I was like, no. Like the editing team has got to be editing. If you do a call, it breaks the workflow. You know, like you got a flow state, all of this. Like, I mean, like on one hand, it's kind of true, but on the other hand, it's also kind of stupid because it's like you need to be able to measure twice, cut once, right? And if you're working on something that doesn't lead to the end result that is done correctly, especially as the videos get more and more complex, right? It's like one thing if you're just editing a video podcast, but it's a whole other thing when it's a more highly produced piece of work. Having that one bit of coordination goes such a long way. And that's something that like I was very, very ignorant of. And I mean, it's one of those interesting things that's like, as you develop, it seems like such an obvious thing to do, but it was a blind spot for me for a very long time. And all credit goes to our general manager, Fed, for making that happen.
Yeah, he's great. We get on a call with him, I feel like at least once a year, just kind of how's everything going, you know, what are you liking with this, that, the other thing. And you know, my creative director can voice her opinion if like, hey, you know, is there any way for us to do this or that? And it feels less like, I think a lot of people think of like remote work, at least in the States, on the Philippines, very much like we think of VAs, right? Anyone can go on like Upwork.com and get a VA for $5 an hour, and it's gonna be someone in the Philippines, but there's that whatever. But by doing that, it's like, no, just like talking with you right now, it's an extension. Like it feels no different than if I would have hired somebody in Nebraska who really liked using Final Cut Pro and editing videos. It doesn't really feel any different. And what I like is that the volume that they work with. So help people understand this. And I even my business brain thinks about like, how much volume is a certain editor taking on, right? Like, you know, at what, you know, where is the, you know, what's like the threshold for an editor as far as projects and all that before they either burn out or whatever it may be?
So it depends on the package that a customer signs up for. Right. So for example, if it's like a one of our smaller packages, an editor will work with more clients because they're doing like 1 minute clips. You know, an editor can, a half decent editor can pump out like a dozen of those a day. And the more sophisticated an editor gets, or like the clips get, the less clients an editor works with. So sometimes it can be as few as two clients. I think there are certain packages, it's only one client if they really need something entirely done up. Some editors, if they only do 1 minute clips, they work across the board. In our case, it's like, it's very much, there's no way to, even with all the AI tools, to remove an editor from that process. Even if the AI tools can help said editor, you still need somebody to be able to make the calls. You still need somebody to be able to make creative decisions. And I think, like, kind of going back to say the difference of video editing to graphic design, it's like you can make video editing easier, but I think it will still be quite a while until it gets to the point where it's as easy as using Canva.
We're going to get back to the podcast in just one second, but just a reminder, guys, the Gym Real Estate Company is open nationwide. If you are a gym owner in the United States and you are looking to lease or buy a building, do not work with that fuckface broker in town. Trust me, they are not able to hold a candle to the suite of services that the Gym Real Estate Company is now providing. We are doing site suitability, operational capacity analysis, 36-month pro formas, and we're providing 1 year of business consulting if you sign with us and we sign a lease or buy a building with you. Guys, it's absolutely, like, there's no classification of a business professional doing what I'm doing with the Gym Real Estate Company. I would love for the opportunity to work with you. Send me a DM at Gym Real Estate on Instagram, and I'd love to talk with you about what you've got going on. All right, back to the podcast.
And so in my eyes, it's the responsibility of, like I say, Video Husky as the like package creator, right? To ensure we have a balance for our editors to have the highest level of productivity, but at the same time, also make sure they don't get burned out, right? So we want to make sure we're not doing like a production company where it's like you're doing what you did, Sue, at the very beginning. You're talking about how you're shooting, editing, weekends, weeknights, you know, like that's not only not sustainable, like you will kill yourself.
Yeah.
And so it's about limiting your number of hours to be work, your weekends or your weekends, your nights or your nights, because that's how you recharge, right? That's how you stay excited for the next, you know, work week and are able to push good workout, which is what matters.
Sure. I remember the time, you know, using you guys, and I know, cause I, for a year before I hired part-time videographers and editors for about a year, and I enjoyed that. There was there's a lot of extra costs traveling with them. They got to get a hotel, a flight, everything. Their timelines were slower cause they were part-time. It wasn't their full-time gig. So they weren't as efficient maybe at times, and it was incredibly expensive. I could be spending up to $65 an hour for editing alone, not even shooting. And it was incredibly expensive. And that's when I'm like, okay, I'm going to lean this thing out. I'm going to do it all, right? I'm going to go all in. I'm going to do everything. And that was exhaustive, a great learning experience, because it allowed me to be dangerous enough to know what good editing looks like. I can appreciate that. And I'm sure you guys probably realize when you talk with clients who are just getting into video production, and maybe they never even took a crack at video editing. So in their head, it's probably a much simpler thing. It is an art. And I remember getting an email from you guys, maybe like 2 years into our relationship or three or something like that. They're like, Mr. Brower, we got to have a conversation. You're using up more gigs or submitting more gigs than we've got to do. And I spend half my business consulting is having businesses do price raises. So I was like, absolutely. I'd fucking pay you guys three times the amount you charge. I mean, and people ask me like, is it worth it? I'm like, do you realize like the plan I'm on, I think comes out to like 1400 or something a month. Some 1500 with some ballpark around there. Do you realize that would literally $1,500 wouldn't even get you one video probably shot and edited. I might get, if I was just hiring an editor for 1500, I might get three videos edited. And you guys produce for me probably no less than 100 videos a month. I mean, it's absolutely insane.
Yeah. And like, I think this is one of those things where when we're going on an entrepreneur journey, right? It's like everybody starts off thinking that they have to do it themselves,
sure,
which is very natural. I think like 98% of people, that's how we typically lean. But which is important, because if you have certain skill sets, you are able to communicate things better. My own personal example is I can't edit a video for shit. You don't want me editing the videos. And that caused all kinds of problems up to now. On the flip side, I recently started learning how to code, specifically Ruby on Rails. And like, while I'm not doing anything with it now, I can see, for example, how some of the previous software stuff that I've created is like, oh, this is where I went wrong with communicating. This cost me like, one small thing cost me $10,000 because I wasn't communicating it correctly. So there is a certain importance about learning, developing your own skill sets, getting to a point where you can then know what good looks like, develop taste. But then after that, it's about being able to let it go and trust somebody else to do it better. And I'll say, I think your point about like our typical way of thinking about working, I think specifically remote work, is you tell somebody else what to do. You tell an assistant what to do. And there are aspects of that that is helpful, especially like if you have a virtual assistant, can help you do the minor scheduling things. But there's a lot of times where somebody else, whether they are right next to you or they are halfway across the world, they will be an expert in something that you're not. And like in Video Husky's case, for example, Fed, our general manager, he lives in South Africa. I would never have met him otherwise, but because of their remote work ability, he's been able to come into Video Husky and suggest changes like the call connect for videos, per video project, something I would have never considered because of my own like introverted tendencies. But he was like, this is like a no-brainer. And he's right. It is a no-brainer. And like, I mean, like the fact that you brought it up goes to show that, because like sometimes, a lot of times, like when you bring the right person in, 1 + 1 can = 3, whether it's on a company level or on a video level. And I think that's something that's, yeah, you don't know it until you experience it, I guess.
100%. I agree with that so much. And it's, you know, it was a small sandbox that you guys are playing in. There weren't a ton of companies trying to take on the scale of doing this. But do you mind sharing, like, how many customers do you guys, does the company currently service?
Well, I mean, over 100, I think quite a few.
Okay. Yeah. So we're, you know, when I remember first getting on it, you know, if you Googled it, there weren't a ton of options. And I remember later on down the road, I had actually a client who had signed on with one of your competitors at Floxy. He's like, you should check it out. They do copywriting. They do this. I'm like, well, let me see. And I did. I had both you guys and I had Floxy for a little over 3 months. I think I did 4 months doing both and talked to my creative director. And we kind of went back and forth. And I was like, the one thing Video Husky is doing beautifully, this is me as just as a business guy, they're just going to be a really good fucking knife. They're not going to try to be a Swiss Army knife that does 15 things. Okay. They're going to do one thing incredibly well. And there were glaring issues between the two services when you looked at it from that level. And I mean, I instantly, you know, I was like, okay, I'm glad we did the experiment. I'm glad I saw what else was out there, but I'm not leaving this. This is too good compared to what else was out there. How do you guys think about this new world where, I mean, I feel like it's every month someone sending me, dude, check out Munch, check out Opus Clips, check out, you know, drop a YouTube link and it makes short form videos and blah, blah, blah. How do you guys think of AI? Because I think...
Oh, hey, Stu, I think you might have cut off.
How about now? We better now?
Oh, yeah, we're good now. We're good now, yeah.
I was asking, you know, with things like with AI, how do we think of, for you, I mean, I can't go a month without anyone telling me about some new AI service that takes long-form video, cuts in the short form, and does this. And I would imagine for your industry, if you think of AI like a competitor versus something to collaborate in and harness and use as a power, how do you guys thinking about that right now?
So let's take video out of it. And let's talk about something that I think you and I can both relate to. I assume at some point you were a personal trainer or you've done some personal training.
Yes, correct.
Right. How long were you a personal trainer for?
Probably did that for like 5+ years.
5+ years. Was there a certain clientele that you worked with, a specific like type of client?
Yeah, it was just kind of your gen pop. It wasn't athletes. It wasn't youth. It was just your average person looking to lose weight, feel better, look better naked, that type of
stuff. Yeah. Scenario. Okay. Right. So let's say somebody who's doing like a 9-to-5 white collar job, they're not trying to, you know, compete in, you know, the NBA. They just want to, you know, like not let things go get out of hand. Right.
Correct.
And so I think let's say that, because for example, if that is how I used to work out with my dad, you know, like he's not trying to go to the, you know, play, you know, Premier League football. He just wants to make sure it doesn't go downhill very, very fast. Right. And so when we think about the goals of that person, it's very different to somebody who does want to compete, let's say in the NBA. And so the strategies that you apply are very different. Right. And so the way that I like to think about this in terms of our customers, let's say for you, we don't want to be an all service. We don't want to be the kind of gym where like, oh, we can help you gain muscle and lose weight and get and like go to bodybuilding before like shows and also work with men and women across all age brackets, because every person has a different goal. And I think it's the same thing with video. There are certain people who use video for sales pages. There are certain people who use video for content. There are certain people who use video for real estate listings. And video is always a means to an end, in the same way that going to the working with a personal trainer is a means to an end. The problem is the goal is always different regardless of who you're working with. And so that's why I think companies like Floxy, where you try to provide four different services, it's not going to work because you're never aligned enough with the creator. In your case, you don't want more copywriting services. You don't want more video editing services. You want your content to pop off, right? You want your content to really resonate with whoever's watching and make them go, oh shit, this video is amazing. I need my best friend to watch it. That's how, you know, like good content, either it spreads the message or it changes somebody's perspective. And so, and like more copywriting services aren't going to help that. More AI isn't necessarily going to help with that because that's not the limiting factor. The limiting factor is content audience fit. And so that's where I think like, yeah, I guess when I was younger, I would try to push for more services, more things. But as I as gotten older, it's like actually what makes a bigger difference is if you can be more aligned with what the, in this case, client, in this case, you, right, are trying to achieve. And the more that we can sync up with that, as opposed to try to push, like going back to the gym analogy, if you are trying to lose weight, it's like, it's not going to help to push like four different kinds of protein shakes at you. It's like, no, it's just, you need a steady diet. You need to do these things and you need to do them consistently over time. And especially if the client recognizes that, I think you're a great example of somebody who recognizes that. That's where magic happens in the long run, because shit runs so smoothly after a while.
A book changed my life. So the gym was a business. It operated without me. My real estate stuff is a business. It makes money without me. But what I do with my consulting and the content I've been doing since 2015, that's always been a job. I've always had this mentality. It's a book by a gentleman named Paul Jarvis called Company of One. And it's the idea of not necessarily having a company of one person, but running the company as lean as possible. And when you do that, you don't have a ton of employees because that's a lot of operational drag. And there's a lot that goes with that. But it's nice because I still feel like I have a company. I have a team. Like it's the, I talk, I mean, every morning I wake up at the same time. I wake up at 4:30 in the morning. I come down. Your boys are still working. Everyone's still there pretty on 4:30 Eastern time. And I can get into Rike, which is the project management software we use with Video Husky. And boom, I get spit off and I get something back. And the team, like I've got a team there and they're the same people. With Floxy, my biggest disconnect, you get a different editor on a every time you submit a project, it's someone completely different. They essentially, you probably know better than I do. I don't know whether it's just pretty much like, it's kind of like an open marketplace. They just ship your, you know, whatever your pitch is or whatever your project is, and whoever grabs it. And that's what you get. And so I was getting different results constantly. And I didn't feel like I had a team. I had someone different. It was a different name every single time. Whereas when, I remember one of my first account manager or even like Galley, when he said I was getting promoted, I'm moving up in the company. I like sent him an email like, dude, that's awesome. Congrats for you. That's, you know, I mean, we never went to each other's birthday parties. We're not boys like that. Our kids don't play together, but I've worked with the guy for years. He's made, you know, some of the best videos I've got out there that have done the best. And so when he told me, hey, I'm moving on, I got promoted, I was pumped for that. That felt good. It felt like a team. And that means something because, you know, for guys like me, or even, which I got to imagine, a lot of the online fitness business guys who do online programming and videos, it can be a lonely spot at times because we're not bringing a ton of employees on. That's what makes that business model so great, is we have such strong profit margins because we don't have 45% of our revenue going to payroll. But yeah, that was one of the biggest glaring differences. I enjoyed the idea of actually having a team, the same people, the same names. It's get to the point where they start, you know, you have a really good friend and they can finish your sentences. I mean, I post up a video and, you know, your team is literally able to go ahead and they're pulling B-roll. Cause back in the day, I'd be like, I remember when we first started, I'd be like, hey, let's go to YouTube. And if I'm talking about Marcus Philly, I want you to pull any B-roll we can rip off YouTube and use it. Cause I didn't capture any when I was out in California, not enough. And now it's just, I mean, it's,
I say one thing in the podcast or in a clip of video, and I didn't bring that B-roll to the table. I didn't upload it for them to use. They'll go find a great clip of it, you know, or something funny that, you know, if I'm like, ah, blah, 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 Wayne Gretzky, and I just drop, they'll go find some clips of Wayne Gretzky just because I made that one line. And that makes that scene that much more interesting because they found a scene, you know, a video clip of Wayne Gretzky checking some guy into the ice. And it was just, it's just that kind of stuff that makes me feel like I don't want to work with an AI machine in that regard, because I want to be able to have that creative collaboration. I know that's, you guys kind of refer to them as almost creative consultants, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think like the way, as you're describing it, right, it made me think of like, I play football, like soccer. Because of the way that I live my life, where I moved around a lot, it's like I moved teams a lot. And one of the frustrations that I have is like when I'm playing, I don't know where my teammates are because I've moved around too much. Versus when I was a kid, I played in the same team year after year. I don't need to look up and I can pass the ball in a certain place and I know my teammate's going to be there because that's chemistry, right? Like that's where magic happens, because you no longer have to think about the basic things because it's already laid out for you. And I think that's still an underrated thing in today's world because everything's too transient, right? Whether it's like, it could be business when you're working with six different freelancers, or it can be dating where, you know, your next date is one swipe away. It's like, it's too transient versus when you are in a world where there are certain advantages that come with that kind of convenience, but there are also certain disadvantages. And one of the disadvantages is you lose that, that chemistry where everything fits together and you can focus on the big picture. And I know it's not a perfect analogy, but that was what came to mind You were describing that process.
And with the AI, you know, with Munch and Opus clips and stuff like that, again, I think for somebody who's maybe just, they're tested, putting their toes in the water of maybe dabbling in some video and paying $65 a month is a safe investment for them versus people like me. This is how I make, you know, this is how I make all my money. It's, you know, back in the day when I first started making videos in 2015, it was literally, we could calculate the ROI and the CAC because it was like every three videos I'd upload, I'd get a client. And literally, I mean, again, and over time that became a much bigger nut to hit over time to now it's, you know, you're chasing the same dragon everyone's chasing online. But it's for someone who's actually trying to make a business out of it, I don't see how you could not create the ROI and the business case in your head of something like Video Husky is not an incredibly sound investment into the team. And it's, you know, I will say the one thing that I'm able to shoot the videos. I think that's maybe one reason why a lot of guys might that I talk to have a hard time with it. They need someone to go shoot the videos, right? They need someone to shoot it. And then it just makes sense to have that guy maybe edit it sometimes. But, you know, these days, man, it's, you know, it's this, you know, I look like a dinosaur, dude. Justin, I walk around with one of my mirrorless or DSLR cameras. Kids look at me like, who the fuck is this old dude walking around with a camera? Why is he just using his phone? How do you see the AI helping you guys accelerate certain things? Because there are some editing plugins and stuff like that, though I got to imagine are going to also be able to help make your editors more efficient, because there are some time tasks and some time consuming tasks in editing that don't require the highest level of like human caliber.
Yeah. Okay. So I'd say, for example, the first thing is dead silence in clips. So imagine, right, you have, let's say our podcast here, right? If we upload the entire thing, you know, at the beginning, we, you know, like you hit record, there's a little bit dead silence, at the end, you know, like there's some dead silence. A lot of podcasts nowadays, they get played at 1.07 speed because people talk too slow and we can listen much faster than we can talk. So a lot of times when you edit that, you can speed up the entire clip, but you still need to edit out the dead speed to make the conversation feel like it's going faster. So stuff like that, AI is, from my very limited understanding, because I am not technical as far as video editing goes, I think that's where you have a lot of base case like edges that's helpful for. The other area that I think AI is very helpful for is it lowers the barrier to getting started. Because I'm sure when you did your content stuff and you were doing everything back in 2015, it was a pain. There were no online editors. I'm sure you had to go through the whole, you learn either
on YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like on Final Cut Pro or on Premiere Pro. Nowadays, it's like you have Veed, you have a few other platforms that make it easier. But over time, It's like, if you are long-term, you see yourself as a business owner, there is no way you don't let that go. I think even if you're talking about some of the most successful solopreneurs, right? I don't know. Do you know Peter Levels?
No.
Yeah. So like this guy, I think at peak had a $2.7 million business, almost all profit, 95% profit margins, doing a job board, doing a nomad community, whatever. Even he had contractors, and his whole thing was, I'm a solopreneur. It's like, but you're not. It's like, you still had help.
You still have a team. Yeah.
Yeah. You still have a team. And so that's kind of like where I think Video Husky, at least the model goes, it's like, you have the benefits of a team without the headaches of HR. And I can say that personally because like we're on the other end, right? It's like HR is a real thing. And it is challenging to work through some of the challenges of that. It's something that like, I personally have trouble managing, but like it's not easy when you have like 40, 50 different people that you need to juggle a lot of balls with.
Human beings are fickle by nature. We change our minds. And especially you get somebody in their late 20s when they're single, no kids, not married. They have a certain kind of job and a certain kind of income and a certain kind of lifestyle works. Then they get married and they're mid 30s. They want to buy a home and things they can't work. Things change and people are seasonal. That's, the biggest bane of every business. No matter how successful you are, is the people. It's the human aspect, the HR. It's the hardest part of any business because these businesses, most of them, the gyms, the whatever, yours, they operate on people. Take all the people that work in the business away. There is no business, right?
Yeah. I mean, literally, in our case, like I started Video Husky at like 25. Me, like the first two dudes that we started working with were, at the time, we were two of us were single. One of us just got into a relationship. It's like the conversations that we have then is not the conversations that we have now. We're all partnered up. All like engage. One of the guys at Video Husky, staff member, he got married to somebody he met at Video Husky, and now thinking about a future, right? It's like that's number crazy. One. Like that blew my mind. But the other thing is like the things you think about are no longer the same. I think the way you put it, like life, people's lives are seasonal. That's a perfect metaphor because what you want is different, and as a result, what you're looking for in work is also different. Yeah. And being able to adjust accordingly matters. And that's something that I think I had to learn a lot about.
The other thing I really appreciate with your team, I've had a mantra. If I create more than I consume content wise, I'll make more money. If I get caught consuming more than I create, scrolling through Instagram and staying up late watching, YouTube after YouTube after YouTube, it's like the person who reads 50 business books and never starts a business. So I always had this mantra, create more than I consume. And by doing that, I don't know what's going on. I know like all my friends and like I have clients, all that, I'm like, oh, do you see the latest trend? I'm like, no, I don't see any of that. I don't even post. I make the videos, get them to Video Husky, they edit and they, whatever, we get them to my creative director, they get published and I'm back into the creation mode. I'm whiteboarding and storyboarding the next thing. So I don't see it. Your guys are able to bring to me, like, when Ryan Magdia and Hormozy kind of popped with that certain subtitle style, dead center of the video. And that kind of got him on. Or when Gary V was doing the black bars at the top of the one by ones, that we saw on Instagram 5 years ago, certain things, your team has always been able to bring to me and be like, hey, thoughts on this? This is kind of trending right now. This is kind of a thing. A lot of clients are doing it, videos or whatever. And that's always been nice to have, someone bring that to my attention because I'm not scrolling on Instagram and TikTok and all that stuff. My screen time is minimal on my phone and those apps. So I that's like something I really appreciate in the human element and the team element of what you guys bring.
No, I appreciate that. And I mean, first off, man, it's like, I've tried content creation. I can tell you it's a real grind. So, power to you to be able to make it happen. So I couldn't do it. I very much consume more than I create. but at the same time, it's like, I'll also say that I think you hit the nail on the head where it's like, if you are somebody who is doing the work, by definition, you have to have blinders on. You cannot like see everything else. It's like, it's the same thing. It's like if you're working out, right? It's like if you're dieting, the best thing to do is like make sure you take all your chips in your house and you throw it out, because the moment you see it, that's when you get distracted. Then, you know, like it all goes to shit afterwards.
Yeah.
But it's helpful when you have somebody else looking out for those things for you. And it's like, there's a book that just came out. I think it's this guy, Morgan Housel. Like the idea is like, the title is same as ever. And it's like, it talks about how we always think about how the world changes, but actually the more important thing is to think about what doesn't change. And he talked about like the understanding of risk, and it's like risk is what is left over when you think about everything that you can prepare for, but it's risk is what you can't prepare for. And in the same way, I feel like trends and stuff, we can't prepare for trends. They just happen. The important thing is not to look out for them, because if you try to look out for every trend, you forget to do the thing. But if you have somebody else who can bring it to you at the right place at the right time, all of a sudden you can go to that place and ride that wave, as opposed to missing out on that little bit of opportunity that can be the edge that takes you to the next level, call it.
Yeah, I've always believed, you know, I always believed investing in employees, even when I had the gym, I believe that the best operators, the best business owners are the ones that realize the number one investment. And this is, again, I say this all the time on the podcast, but I care about the retention of my team more than I care about the retention of a customer. All right. So like for every gym owner out there, there's another fat lady who's going to walk through your door in 6 hours, in 10 minutes, whatever it is. But if you have an incredible sales manager, it's very hard to find another incredible employee. And if you're a good founder and an entrepreneur, all I ever thought about was how many people can I surround myself with that allow me to just be laser focused on the one mission, on the one thing. The more people I have that specialize in this, like Video Husky, and specialize in my schedule and the, you know, in my admin and whatever, it allows me to not focus there. It allows me just to stare at the end goal, whatever the end goal is. And that's, you know, gym owners, you know, and business owners will maybe invest in certain things that they don't actually give the owner blinders and the ability to be laser focused. It actually forces them to have to look at 5 or 6 things at once now. It have to be, again, back to that Swiss Army knife analogy. And that's the thing now in today's world. It's like, you know, I don't know who I can credit with saying this. It's definitely been said before. It's like every business, whatever you make, if you make widgets or a service, that's not your core business. You're actually a media company that just also happens to sell a widget or a service. Because, you know, it's like, you know, back in the day, if you weren't in the phone book in the United States, we had the yellow pages.
Yeah.
If you weren't there, it didn't matter what you did. Yeah. Like nobody was able to find you. If a mime, what's the saying? If a mime gets hit by a tree in the woods, does anyone fucking care? Does anyone know? No, because he doesn't make any noise. And that's how it works.
Yeah, that's a crazy thing, right? Because especially in in the online space, right? You work mostly online. I work mostly online, where everything gets commoditized, right? Because we're all going to the same YouTube pages, we're all going to the same Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, whatever. Being able to develop that relationship with customers is important, but only if you're able to show up every day. I think especially if you are in the content game, it's like there are certain YouTubers, they may only upload a video like 5 days a week, and that video may only be 2 minutes, but shit, I look forward to that 2 minute video. And because they are consistent in my life, like I feel like I get to know them. But I am sure the only reason they can do that is because they got at least one, if not two, if not three staff members, plus probably a supportive spouse behind them that enable them to only think about this one thing. And it just goes a long, long way. And I notice it even in my in my own life. It's like moving to New Zealand recently. It's like we have a house now. I gotta mow the lawn. It's like thinking about the stupid lawn means I'm not thinking about what I gotta work on. It's like blinders are a very, very underrated thing, I think, in today's world.
How do you think about the growth of the company? It's funny you mentioned earlier, Ruby on Rails. If you could create a Video Husky that just had Ruby on Rails developers, I've got developer buddies here in the States. They can't find Ruby developers to save their life. They're having to go to Australia and all over the place. It's I know nothing about it. I just, as soon as you said that, I'm like, that's the stuff my buddy Joe bitches. He can never find great developers that use Ruby. Anyway. How do you think about Video Husky going forward? I mean, is the scale and the idea, obviously,
you know, impact more creators' businesses and, you know, making more videos and all that? Or how does that scale for you?
It's interesting because that answer changes. Well, it only changed over the years. It's like when I first started and we got on like a little bit of a rock, like a hockey stick rocket type growth, I thought, I was like, oh, this is going to go to five, like 10 million or whatever, right? We're not a $10 million company, I can tell you that now. Very, very, very far from that. And like, I'm okay with that. I think the big difference was maybe COVID. It's like all of a sudden there's an explosion of online people in space. And, you know, when you have more competition, like Videohusky, it's a great company, don't get me wrong, but it's also not the hardest thing to set up. We're all online. We don't have like a huge moat or anything. So we can get to a certain point, and from there it's a much longer grind, I think, to the next level. But I think what matters, especially let's call it in a more challenging economic environment, is that you are there, you are around. Video Husky is maybe five and a half years old now. I remember thinking back in the day, it's like, oh, we thought by the quarter, right? It's like every 3 months, as far as we can think. But like realistically, it's like, do I think Video Husky will be around 5 years from now? Do I think we'll make it to 10? It's like, well, we've already made it 5 years. Those were the hard five years. We'll probably be around five more years from now. And so what matters for me is that Video Husky stays in the game, because one way or another, the trends of video is not going anywhere. The trends of remote work is not going anywhere. The trends of globalization, of people being able to work with people across different time zones, those skill sets, they're not going anywhere. That's just going to get better and better. And if you are around for the right wave to push you, I think that matters a lot more, as I've gotten older, or at least come to realize, than trying to push super, super hard. So it's just staying available, staying like lean, staying profitable, and enabling the business to be sustainable, that gets you the wins you want in the long run, if that makes sense.
No, it does. Absolutely. Do you have any other entrepreneurial journeys going on right now? Is Video Husky 100% of what you do right now, or what does that look like?
Oh yeah. So Video Husky is I've actually been out of Video Husky's day to day for more than 2 years now. In 2021, we hired a general manager, Fed. We brought him up a couple of times. Yeah. He runs the whole show now. I meet with him every couple of months. And that's it. He's the one who has brought new ideas. He's the one who has come up with new packages. And he's the one who runs the show. For me, last year was a sabbatical year. This year has mostly been about trying to figure out what I want to do next. I'm not sure. Learning Ruby has been a quite enjoyable journey. It's like one of those things where it's like you feel like you're growing again versus I think the last 4 or 5 years. It's not that growing a company, you don't feel like you're growing, but it's just a lot more doing than it is like being personally stretched.
Yeah.
And so I like that. So we'll see. I've realized that managing a company of 50 plus people, not my jam. Is that you were saying with the company of one by Paul Jarvis, is that I like the idea of being more flexible. And I think something, let's say, for example, like learning Ruby or learning the ability to develop, like let's say version one SaaS apps. It's like that, I don't need to be the best developer in the world. I just need to be able to get to like stage one, and then somebody else can do like, you know, version 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, because that's where you can take ideas and make them into reality much faster. And I think anybody who's a founder knows 95% of ideas go to shit anyway. So it's just more about getting things out quickly and faster. And I think the next venture I would like to do would be something within software with a leaner team, if not maybe a team of 1+ contractors.
Yeah. I need to do an introduction with you and my buddy Joe. He's developed a CRM and really cool software here in the industry. And he's pretty much been a company of one guy too, just kind of, but outsourcing developers here and there. And that's what I was mentioning on the Ruby side. It's fun, like, talk to me about this, because I bet you a lot of gym owners right now are listening to this, and a lot of them, they get into the business, they wear all the hats, right? They love it. They don't mind it. And then as time goes on, they want to start taking those hats off and handing them. You've got to the point where you were able to pretty much hand the hats off and get, you know, to Fed, who now runs it. Now you're operating completely remote. And I know that for most small business owners, that's just like, well, how the fuck did he do? Like, how did you get to that point?
what would you say are some of the big takeaways? Like, if you want to incentivize someone and keep someone around for a while to manage and run and grow the thing that you created, how, A, do you get to the point of being comfortable giving him the hat to do that, right? Like managing your baby without micromanaging him. And then how do you keep somebody incentivized with that? Like, talk to me a little bit about becoming in this remote role of ownership.
Okay. So I think there's two levels to this. Are we talking more, let's say, from somebody who's going to running the gym entirely themselves, let's say one to a team, or are we going from there's already a team in place and the owner wants to completely step out?
This would be one from an owner who's built the team up over time, but still can't fit, like, doesn't understand, okay, well, what would I have to incentivize someone to do to stick around, like to be my number two? And also, how do you go about finding a number two? Cause I mean, that's a big responsibility. Like Fed, I mean, I can't imagine when you think of the quality of him as a manager and to run the company, he's not low on that list. If on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being great, 1 being horrible, you know, you got to find someone and that's a 5 and develop them up to an 8 or a 9, or you got to find somebody who comes batteries included. It already is an 8 or a 9 when he showed up on day one.
So I'll say the first thing, find somebody who's an 8 or a 9 that's batteries included. Because
which costs more and is more rare.
Which costs more.
Worth is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's worth it because there's a couple of things in this, right? It's like, one, if you are burning out and you are ready to go, or let's say you see your life 3 years from now, you're not running the show. Some people want to run the show. Some people want to run the show forever. You know, like my dad, he's 62. He runs a business. That guy's not retiring until he's like 95, whatever. You know, like he loves it. He doesn't, you know, go like there are people like that. And if that's you, go for it. You know, go nuts and hire the team around you. If you're, I guess, like me, I like to dabble in things, so I want to be able to be free to do that. Then you need to build, ideally, your business in a way that isn't so dependent on you. So before you even think about the actual individual, right? It's like, how do you run this business more independently of you? And there's a good book on this, Clockwork by Mike McAllowitz. Oh, yeah,
Mike McAllowitz. I had him on the podcast to discuss that exact book.
Oh, that's sick, man. Yeah, Well, I'll tell you what, if at some point I get to interview him for a podcast, I really enjoy him and his books. But before even talking about the individual, the business needs to be able to run independently somewhat of you. And I really liked his analogy of being able to take a 1 week vacation, mm-hmm. a few more months, a 2 week vacation, a few more months later, can you take an entire month off? When you can get the business to a place where you can take an entire month off, And don't get me wrong, at the end of the month, I am sure there are pressing needs and there are issues that you have to be managed. Then you know you're probably ready to bring a general manager on, assuming you have the revenue and the profit margins to do so. But the first journey is really to be able to change that mindset within yourself that you have to be there. Once you've proven that you don't have to be there over a 1-2 weeks peer stretch and then a 1 month, you can then start to look for that person. And that's the second part, which is looking for that person, like finding Fed. It was a many, many, many month journey. It wasn't like you put a job ad up and boom, tomorrow you're going to find somebody. It's like, no, that's like, it's going to take time. And that's okay. It's meant to, because that person's hard to find, right? Like they're like anybody who you are excited about bringing on, they will be looking at multiple jobs as well. And so take your time and be able to sell your job. And it's much easier to sell the job that you're doing if they know that you're not hovering over their shoulder. If they know that there is profitable. They're not being thrown into a fire. They're not being, that they'll have autonomy to make decisions. And if you've already kind of gone through that internal journey, then I think that's where it makes all the difference, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely. It's Clockwork. You're right. Clockwork was a great book for that. The framework for when I do the functions of a gym or any business comes from that, you know, attract, convert, deliver, collect, and connect. He teaches in that book those 5 functions that you need to make sure can stand up on their own. And in the gym scene, I think it's real hard. I think gym owners, we make really tight connections with customers because you see a customer face to face daily. Yeah. And then you experience their highs and lows in life daily. And for them to then walk away from that and get someone else to care about these people as much, I think some gym owners can find that to be somewhat daunting, but I also feel a lot of us in small business, we just get in our own way. And, you know, it's, there's that analogy, like, you're juggling a couple balls. Your business is not a glass ball. it's rubber. Like if you fuck up or the GM fucks up or something happens, it's going to bounce and you can catch it. This is not like water for crystal that's going to shatter if you're gone for a week if one thing goes wrong. Like it's but I think we feel like it is, like it's way more fragile than it is. Businesses are very resilient. I mean, even during COVID in the States, the fitness industry got hurt, a lot of businesses got hurt, but by and large at the scale, most people did okay. Like most people did okay. Some did not, but most did okay. So it's like, man, if COVID can't kick you, you know, force you to shut down, I don't think your GM making six bad decisions is gonna, you know, take the thing to zero. You're not gonna go back to the Stone Age with this business that way. One more thing before I have you go, and be respectful of your time. When it comes to scaling a team like yours in the remote environment, and looking at like with the Philippines and things like that, is video editing something? Because I, again, even here in the States, I don't know that many videos. Is there something about that type of work in the Philippines that people gravitate towards? Why is that such a prominent area for VAs and editing?
Philippines specifically?
Yeah.
I think the biggest difference with Philippines, and it's an odd one for people to think about, is actually the demographics. I don't know what it is now, but I can, like, when Video Husky started, the median age for Philippines was 22.
Oh, wow.
So it's a very, very young country that grew up mostly consuming American culture, like American media. I think the last like 30 years was like, it's like, you don't really see British television anymore. You know, like it's like mostly American. It's like now you have maybe more with like Netflix international stuff, but it's like the last 20 years is like, I've watched nonstop American stuff. So even Hong Kong cinema scene's gone now. And so you have a very young population that grew up with American culture, that grew up with computers. And because Philippines is also the only English, maybe not English native, but English, that definitely best English as a second language country in all of Asia. There literally isn't another one. So Singapore is next closest, but Singapore's 5 million people. Philippines is 122 million people. It leads to a lot of factors that enable Philippines to stand out. And because there was so much focus, I think, in the 90s and zero zeros of big countries putting their call centers there, there is also a lot of comfort. Like people are used to the idea of their kids, oh yeah, you work for a company abroad. Like it was very, very normal versus I think for many other countries, it's still a very new thing. If like, you know, an 18-year-old tells their parent, oh, I'm working for some company online, you call it, like, let's say in Eastern or Western Europe, it's like, hey, what? That like, no, go learn a trade. Versus in Philippines, it's like, it's already been like an established like industry 20, 30 years. It's like, oh yeah, like I did that. So it 100% makes sense for you. I support you, you know, like what do you need? No, like that kind of support I think is very underrated, where you're not like trying to fight your own family members. And so I think just like a combination of many little factors enabled Philippines to be a great place to outsource. I really don't like the word, but like work remotely with.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that all those reasons make perfect sense. And I've always just tried to be like, it's not just cheap labor. There's obviously an economic difference in what the wage would be in America versus the Philippines and all that. But I remember joking around with my creative director when I was using Floxy. I had 4 videos edited, all domestic. They showed the state that these people were from, and unless it was a fake avatar. But I don't think it was. They're all local domestic. And the videos were just complete dog shit. Just absolutely horrible. And then, you know, I've got my crew here. I'm like, I cannot tell you how, I don't know whether I saw an ad or whatever it was, but I can't tell you. I mean, I would have burnt out and quit if I would have kept going at that rate had I not signed on with you guys. I mean, I was someone like between Video Husky, my CPA and my financial planner, like that's my entire team right there, is make sure my shit's together, and the rest of it's, you know, me, an admin. And, but that's the team. That's what has made my entire livelihood, possible. And, but man, I, that,
Thank you so much for building it. It's phenomenal. I hope anyone listening to this who's got video editing needs, whether you're a gym owner or an entrepreneur of any kind, you got a side passion project you want to start doing that requires content, they 100% need to look into you guys. And I'll Fed hit me up with like the new promo and affiliate links and all that you guys have, and I'll make sure to put that in the show notes. But yeah, again, brother, thank you so much for coming on. This is super cool. I was so excited to do this with you.
Oh, thanks, man. Really appreciate it. And yeah, it's it hits different when you hear it. Like, I mean, I know we're not in person or whatever, but yeah, it really hits different when it's like over, like when you're talking on the phone or on Zoom or whatever. Yeah, I really appreciate that. And thanks for having me on.
Well, Justin, thank you so much, man. Best of luck in whatever it is you do next. I'm sure it'll be great. And yeah, everybody go check out the show notes down below. Grab that link. If you're interested in learning more about Video Husky, I'll have it all down there. Thank you so much for coming on today, brother.
Cool. Thanks, man.